everybody, Kim here, and welcome back to the Wide Awake International Podcast. This is a place where I share stories of bringing hope, love, and dignity to our friends with disabilities here in Ukraine. This is the second time I'm trying doing the podcast with a coinciding YouTube video because some people prefer to watch instead of listen, and I actually think I like it better because I find it really hard to just talk to a microphone in an empty room. And I am talking into a microphone in an empty room right now, but I'm also watching myself on my phone. So it feels maybe like I'm talking to somebody. I don't know. It's somehow a little bit easier. Anyway, in our last episode, I shared all about the beginning days of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. I shared how it affected our team, our family, our boys, how we responded during those first days, and ultimately leading up to our decision to leave Ukraine to head to Germany to get our boys and our kids to safety. It was not an easy decision, and I shared all about it in the previous episode, episode number 6. So if you want to hear all about that, go ahead and listen to that first, and then come back and listen to this. Because today, I want to talk to you about our evacuation, how we left Ukraine. It was an undertaking. And a lot of our friends left and went to Western Ukraine or even left Ukraine before the war even started. But we were adamant that we were going to stay because the thought of taking all of our boys across Europe, even during the best of circumstances, which war is not the best of circumstances, even in the best of circumstances, it seemed like something we would never, ever want to do. But it was inevitable. It wasn't safe to stay here anymore, emotionally safe. And we didn't know if it was going to stay physically safe. So we decided to leave. March 5th, a group of 39 or 40 of us packed up and headed west. I had to think about that for a second. Headed west. It was a ragtag group. It was our family, all the girls on our team, minus two. The men in our team were not allowed to leave, still are not allowed to leave Ukraine. Men ages 18 through 60 are not allowed to cross the border unless under special circumstances, which none of our guys qualify for that. And then family members of our team, I mean, we had two grandmas, one was 89 years old, we had sisters and nephews and two other moms that had sons with disabilities. We also had one of our team members who decided to stay. Her name is Nina. Her husband is serving in the front line still and was then, and her mom is quite elderly and unwell, so she felt like she needed to stay, but she sent her teenagers with us and her adult son, Sirosha, who has really significant disabilities. They came with us as well. It was just a really interesting group, lots of needs. I think we had 11 or 12 people with disabilities. So, and then like a lot of kids, I think we had 11 teenagers. It was intense, lots of emotions on all sides. The morning of March 5th, we all loaded up. We took all of our vehicles here that belong to Dimhidnosti, our personal car, one of the aunts that came along, she brought a car. And the guys on our team helped drive, even though we knew they were just going to get us to the border. Our partners in Germany, that was our final destination, we knew that they were going to send a van to meet, you know, to help transport from the border to Germany because our guys that were driving couldn't cross. So we decided to head south to the Romanian border because we had heard that that was an easier border crossing. I mean, there were places crossing into Poland where people were waiting for days, not a day, days in line to cross the border. And we knew that that was not feasible for us, for our group. So we decided to head towards Romania. The Border Patrol had a website, maybe still, that was supposed to give live updates on how long the wait was at the border. So one of our board members, his name is Josh, he was monitoring the border situation and telling us, okay, like this one is long, this one looks shorter, so head towards this one. And then we just started heading west. We had to take some people from the city, pick them up, and then we headed west. It was very slow going. I had told you in the earlier episode that this group doesn't move fast. I mean, we just can't. Our guys can't sit endlessly in cars. lots of toilet breaks. And then there were so many barricades and checkpoints. I mean, there still are quite a lot when you're driving anywhere in Ukraine. But I mean, just to get our kids to school every morning, we drive through a barricade checkpoint just to get our kids into town to school. But I mean, at that time, every bridge, the entrance and exit of every village, I mean, you had to, so there's like an etiquette to it. When you're pulling up to the barricade, you turn off your lights, you turn on your interior lights, you turn on your hazard lights. You have to pull up to the officer, but you know, patrolling. Border Patrol guard or officer, whoever it is, they might want to see your documents. They might just wave you through. They want to see how many people are in the vehicle. Sometimes they would check the trunk. Where are you going? Where are you coming from? Lots of questions. Sometimes we got lucky, and because we were all caravanning, if the first person in line answered all the questions, showed that there was people with disabilities in the vehicles and explained our situation, sometimes they would just let us all through, but sometimes they would stop every single car. So it took a really long time to get very far. And we realized that, you know, towards late afternoon, evening, we realized that there was no way we were going to make it to the border in time. And Ukraine, all of Ukraine, like all over Ukraine, there are curfews. Even to this day now, during wartime, there's a curfew. And so you really shouldn't be traveling past curfew. It's okay if you're waiting at the border at that point, but you can't just be driving through towns and villages when it's curfew. And so we realized we weren't going to make it. A girl from our team contacted a church near the Romanian border, still in Ukraine, but near the Romanian border, and they agreed to host us for the night at the super, I mean, it was the last minute, and we're like a group of 40. So we get there. It was so kind. They had made us dinner. I mean, they fed all of us, and then they showed us where we were going to sleep, and it was like, I mean, it was laugh or cry. We were super thankful, but it was a laugh or cry moment because there was just this massive room with like mattresses, just wall-to-wall mattresses. I mean, more than 40 mattresses because we didn't take all of them up, but I just walked into this room and I see just all these mattresses. Like there was just a tiny little piece of floor you could walk through. Otherwise, you're just walking on mattresses. And I thought, how in the world are our boys going to do this? How? Because like at home, they all have their own room. We tried when we brought Antoine and Ruslan to live with us from the institution, we tried to have them sleep together. It did not work. They were so afraid at night. They just needed their own space. Now they're all very accustomed to having their own space at night. Our guys do not sleep well, historically. Notoriously, our guys do not sleep well. Well, it doesn't matter. If you're in your own room and you're not bothering anybody, fine. Like, I can't make you sleep. But then we're in this room, just everybody. Some of us had been driving, like, literally all day, and we're going to be driving all day the next day. And it was like, wow, we are not going to get any sleep. And I remember Bimo, our Boris, I thought, well, I'll just have him sleep right next to me. And so I we're trying to explain to our boys like what we're doing. They don't understand what's going on. I barely understood what was going on. But we're explaining to all our boys like where you're going to sleep. And, you know, we're just going to stay here one night and then we'll be back on the road tomorrow. So I lay Bimo down by me and we're just laying on these mattresses like face to face. And he just starts laughing, like giggling, like, he was so happy to be spending the night with all of his favorite people. Unfortunately, he laughed most of the night. But actually, I thought it was going to be like a total catastrophe, total disaster. It actually wasn't so bad. I don't know if anybody slept, but at least no one was punching anybody. Nobody was having a complete meltdown. So it was rough, but it was way better than I thought. And that was the moment where I thought, okay, maybe this is going to be okay. Like I had a glimmer of hope that our boys, like they didn't totally break down then. Like maybe they're going to be okay on this trip. So we get up in the morning. They fed us again. So nice. You guys, so nice. And then we just headed straight to the border. So Josh, our board member who was looking at the live update, saw that it was about a 20-minute wait at this Romanian border. So we get up there. Yeah. they definitely weren't updating their website because it was not a 20-minute wait. I mean, you look at the number of cars, that was going to be days. So then we're like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Some of our guys were having meltdowns just if the block, like if the, here they're called block posts, but if the barricade wait was too long, they were kind of having meltdowns. They're not going to be able to sit in a car for days and days and days. What are we going to do? So our partners, they already, like the van that was supposed to meet all of us, all of our guys, it was close. Like it was going to be arriving soon on the Romanian side of the border. So we just decided, okay, let's just send all the people with disabilities who can't wait and all of the team members, the moms of the sons that have special needs, we'll send all of them across the border by foot because to cross the border by foot was maybe like a couple hour wait. And then they can, the van provided by our partners can meet them and take them to Germany. We'll find a quicker border crossing and we'll just meet them there. That was the thought. We totally trust our team. I had zero doubts that they would be able to handle getting the guys the rest of the way. But we knew we needed to have a couple cars in Germany. We couldn't just leave all of our vehicles in Ukraine because we didn't know how long we were going to be in Germany and we had to be able to get around somehow. So we decided they would all go. So Jed and I decided to help get the guys across the border. Jed, even though he's a man, he's an American citizen, so he's allowed to exit Ukraine and then he would just come right back. But because he's the legal guardian of all of our guys, he had to be the one, you know, we had to go with them to cross them over into Romania. So we're in line and we get up to the window thing and guys, they didn't want to let our guys cross. They didn't want to let our boys exit Ukraine because they're military age. I'm laughing now, but it was not a laughing matter at the time. They literally looked at our guys and were like, no, they can't leave. Like, do you have the letter that says that they're exempt from military service? Like, no, like we had no idea that we needed a letter of exemption because all of our guys, so Ukraine has different levels of disability. All of our guys are first level of disability, which means they need the highest level of care, which means they cannot live independently by law. They must have a guardian. So doesn't that automatically mean that they're not fit for military service? Like, I mean, Jed is their guardian. He decided that they needed to leave the country, so they should be able to leave. And they're like, nope, you need this letter. So what you guys are going to do is you need to leave and you need to go 15 kilometers away to the next town over and go to this municipal building and get the letter and then come back. We're like, no, we're not going to do that. Look at these guys. And we show BMO. Like, and Nina's son, Sirosha, he's in his 20s, but guys, you carry him in your arms like a baby. I mean, he can't do anything for himself. They're saying he can't cross because he's military age. It was so ridiculous, but at the same time, I understand that it was the early days of the war. They were just trying to do their job, but this was insane. So they're like, Jed said they're not fit for service. And the man, one of the guys was, border guards was like, well, they can peel potatoes. And I'm like, really? They can peel potatoes? Please show me your ways because I've never been able to teach a single one of them to safely peel potatoes. But like, I've been missing out on kitchen help all these years. So Jed, finally it came down to Jed saying, okay, if they have to, you know, serve in the military, then I guess that means that I'll have to go with them so that I can change their diapers. Literally. I don't know. Phone calls were made. We basically were like, we're not leaving. We're going to stand here and let you until you let them cross. They're not fit for service. Finally, I don't remember like how they changed their minds, but obviously they allowed us to pass. And later on, like in April, Jed ended up bringing a couple more of our boys from the institution straight to Germany. And by then they had it figured out because they had no trouble crossing the border. They didn't need any letters of exemption from the military service. But, you know, in these early days, like nobody knew what they were doing. How do you plan for such a huge, massive migration of people? But at that time, I mean, it was freezing cold. It was just, it was a fight we weren't expecting to have, I guess. But anyway, eventually we got our way, crossed over, partners met our guys in the team, and then they were headed off towards Germany. And the rest of us, we had to go find another border crossing. So there was a law at the time that if you Ukrainians who did not have a biometric passport could not travel freely through Romania, you would have to stay in those tents just on the other side of the border. Well, one of the women who was traveling with us in her own car, she was a family member of some of our friends with disabilities. So she wanted to bring her own car to Germany, but she was like, I don't have a biometric passport. So she wasn't going to be able to travel freely through Romania. So we realized we had to go up. We had to go up through Poland, you guys. Come to find out later, she actually did have a biometric passport. She just didn't realize it, but we never told her because she would have felt really bad about all of that. But oh man. Anyway, it's okay. What's done is done. So anyway, we drove several hours to find a Polish crossing that looked like it wasn't going to take very long. So again, Josh is looking at this site. Now we realize it's not really reliable, but I mean, what are you going to do? You have to try for something. So Josh is looking for where we can cross in Poland. I will say I felt quite a bit of relief that our guys were out of Ukraine, that our team was mostly out of Ukraine, that they were safe. I knew they were headed to a place where they're going to be welcomed with open arms. I did feel like a little bit more like job well done. We took care of our boys and they're headed to safety. So who stayed behind was our friend Sveta, who said she didn't have the biometric passport, but actually did. That's okay, no harm done. Grant, who had just arrived in Ukraine like 4 days before, he was going to help drive. And then me and Jed and our kids. We just wanted our kids with us. I didn't like the idea of us still being in Ukraine and our kids traveling through Europe. I wanted our kids with us. Vlad really, really wanted to travel with everybody else on the bus because he heard there was going to be a big bus, and you know, Vlad is an adult, so we let him make that choice for himself. So Vlad went with the rest of the team, but the rest of our kids were all with us. And we went in search for a border crossing. We ended up finding one in Poland that wasn't supposed to have a long wait, but it really did. Like you just are driving down this highway towards the border, and then all of a sudden stop. And you realize, oh, this is where the line ends. And it was much longer than we had anticipated. We were not well prepared. We didn't have enough food. We didn't have enough water. Guys, I know that there were people that had it so much worse than us. People that waited for days and days and days at the very, very beginning of the war. But we did end up waiting, I think, 26 hours at the border. It was, like, I want to be all positive. I don't want to sound like a complainer, but it was terrible. I don't ever want to do it again. So I'll describe it for you. So you're just parked in this really long line along a highway. It wasn't a foresty highway. It was just like empty fields on either side. It was cold. It was the very beginning of March, so it was really cold. I had stupidly only brought the shoes that I had on my feet. And I thought, well, I'm going to be driving, so I don't want to have like snow boots on. So I was wearing like just Converse tennis shoes. And it was snowing. Yeah, that was a really smart move on my part. Anyway, we just really weren't prepared. There was along the way, like many, many hours into our wait, we did creep up to, there was like a tiny little mini market. But that was it. So basically you had to you couldn't keep your engine running all the time because we could run out of gas, right? But it was also cold, so you needed the heater on sometimes. But so we kind of made a rule, like every third time the car moved, we would just turn on the engine for a little bit to warm up. You couldn't sleep because if you slept and you didn't keep moving forward, other drivers would come around you and you, I mean, I think at one point Sveta fell asleep and when she woke up, like Jed wasn't in front of her anymore. And by the time we saw, like Jed was like 11 cars in front of her because she had fallen asleep and people just creep right in front of you. There was no, not really self-service. Hit or miss. The hardest part I think was just the toilet situation because you know, there's no toilets, but there's also no forest. And there's just this long line of cars all along the highway. So where do you go to the bathroom? This is what we would do. I would say to Addy or I would say to Sveta, okay, like I'm going to run off into the distance. And when you can't really see me anymore, yell. And that's where I'll squat and go to the bathroom. And that's what we would just do for each other. We'd just start running and be like, stop. And then the person would just crouch down and go to the bathroom. There was no other option. Our kids, I have to say, were amazing. They did amazing. I mean, what did they have with them? Nothing. They had nothing to keep them busy. I think they might have had, we might have had a couple Kindles. Evie had a little backpack with some Barbies that we wanted to bring some of her toys to Germany with us. But I mean, they were really troopers. They were so patient and it had been such stressful days leading up to that. I'm just really, really proud of them. Really proud of them. So, I don't know, 25, 26 hours we were in that line. It felt like it was going to be an eternity, but finally, finally, we made it really without incident over into Poland, where thank God we had some friends from Germany that drove all the way from East Germany to the Polish border, and they met us there. I think it was like 1 a.m. when we finally crossed in to Poland, and they met us there with a couple cars and a couple extra drivers, and they let us sleep in the car, and they drove us to this like retreat center up in the mountains, which we ended up using as a stopover place many times when people were going back and forth from Ukraine to Germany. And we just crashed out there. We're so thankful that they did that for us. And then we woke up the next morning to continue our travels. One thing that was really, I don't know, significant, I guess, for me was when we woke up that morning. I didn't even really know like where we were. It was all a blur of us getting to that mountain house. But it's right in a like resort town, like a ski resort town. And there was snow everywhere. And we just pulled out from the mountain house to continue our drive to Germany. And there were people vacationing, like there were people skiing and at coffee shops and just... I've experienced some culture shock in my day, but that was a different level. I wanted to scream at all of them, like, don't you even know what's going on just a few hours away from you? It's like, it was like crossing from Ukraine into this resort town. It was like crossing into a different universe. It just felt a bit like, how can people just be vacationing and living a normal life, like so close to this terrible, terrible war that's happening. Like, don't they know? Don't they care? But then, like, I think about all of my life, there have been wars happening all over the world, and I've never cared like I care right now about this war in Ukraine. Why? It didn't affect my life. I didn't know anybody there personally. And I lived my life. I've just been living my life for more than 40 years, oblivious to the suffering of other people in some of these wars that are happening all over the world. So you want to judge those people in that moment, but at the same time, you're like, well, I could be them. I could be them. So I don't really have a place to judge, but it was really very much a shock. Because when you're in that like tension of living during war, it just feels like the whole world stopped and that's the only thing that's happening. But of course, that's not the only thing that's happening for most of the world. That was a little bit crazy. So we traveled from Poland to East Germany, stayed the night with our dear friends, and then the next day traveled and met up with our team and our boys. We all met up at the church in Germany where we ended up living for the next 4 months all together. I was super concerned, like, how did the guys do along the road? And the team reported that they really, for the most part, did really great. They spent one night in Romania, and then the second day of their travel, they had this huge bus that had a toilet. Like, it had a little tiny bathroom at the end of the bus. That is the best thing that could ever be for our guys, because some of them, when they got to go, they got to go, and they just aren't going to hold it, and they have to go often. So to not have to pull over the bus every single time Antoine needs the toilet saved them loads and loads of time. They did report, though, that when they crossed over the border into Germany, it was like the middle of the night, and some of the guys had been sleeping. I think most people were asleep on the bus. They made everybody get out of the bus. And it was like the middle of the night. Our boys had no idea what was going on, no understanding of the situation. And they made everybody get out, line up in a line, and look at all their documents. Well, Ruslan, you know, he was confused. He was tired. He was in a bad mood. And he's like, I want to eat. And they're like, well, Ruslan, we're not going to eat right now. Where's the soup? Somebody give me soup. Oh, I think we all felt like that in those moments, like, just get me back to my normal life. Somebody give me soup. So I don't remember exactly what day it was, March 8th or March 9th, that we all finally were reunited again, safe and sound in Kaufbeuren, Germany, and at that little church where we ended up living as a big, huge family for the next 4 months, which I will talk about that experience in the next episode. I hope that this was interesting for you. Man, it was quite an experience for us. I will never, ever forget it. I have a friend in the U.S. that I used to homeschool with back when we lived there, and we would always read our kids those YWAM missionary stories, chapter books. And, you know, every time I would tell her something crazy that had happened here in Ukraine, she'd be like, oh, that's, you know, the next chapter in your YWAM missionary book. And she wrote to me at the beginning of the war, wow, like, can't wait to hear how the war chapters of the book are going to be shaping up. And, oh man. So sometimes when these crazy things happen, like 26-hour border crossings, I think, oh, that's going to be one for the YWAM missionary book. So that is the story of our evacuation from Ukraine. In the next episode, I'll be sharing all about our life in Germany, how we spent our time, what it was like to all live together. Whew, that was another experience. I think you'll be interested to hear all about it. If you have any questions, you're always welcome to write. I'll leave our contact information in the show notes. Also, you can check us out on YouTube. I've made lots of videos throughout this wartime, which you're always welcome to check out. And if you want to sign up for our newsletter where we send weekly updates, I'll put a link for that also in the show notes. Hope this was enjoyable. Thank you so much for your love and support. And we're really thankful that we're not on this journey alone. Talk to you next time. Bye.